Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today is Mr. Ryan Foley. He is the CEO of Industrial Projects at DHL Global Forwarding, and he's based in the UK. First and foremost, Ryan, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure is all mine. As you know, I always do the same with my interviewees. I allow them to elaborate a little bit about how they ended up in logistics in the first place. How come you're not in the City of London doing banking or something else? How come you're in logistics? How did that come about?
I guess I'll try and keep the long story short. I had a plan or a few plans when I was kind of going through secondary education and didn't want to follow through on either of them. So found myself looking for some exciting career to take me in a different direction. And a family friend actually ran an export packing company based in the UK,
okay,
who were owned by Transglobal, or the group that owns Transglobal Projects now.
Right.
And they did a lot of work for Panalpina, then Pan Projects, TGP, these kind of companies. And I got working for them, did some very interesting moves or packing of material heading out to Angola and Cabinda and Kazakhstan and these kind of places, and thought, this sounds interesting. So thought it was an area that I'd quite like to get into. Tried to actually get a job at Pan Projects and couldn't get one.
Okay.
So I joined DHL to get me some experience so that I could then go and work at Panalpina. And I've been here ever since. So I actually joined Danzas, who were just being bought out by DHL at the time, 2003, and have been here ever since. So I joined as an ocean freight trainee, quickly moved after a year or so into the project department, and have had various roles in industrial projects. But since that then, it was kind of formalized in DHL around 2006. So we had pockets of people doing projects much before that, but really we got a kind of formal setup. You might remember we had quite a few guys join us from FH Bertling back in 2006, Peter Ferdinand and a few others. So that was kind of when it was formalized within DHL, and then from there have had various roles, and for the last 4 years been had the pleasure of leading the business in DHL.
That's quite an impressive career. I mean, you've certainly seen it from the very start until where you are now. I mean, DHL is a behemoth in global forwarding, and not least also in industrial projects. Before I go on to more practical questions on DHL industrial projects, I think many of our readers and viewers, let's say the smaller companies at least, or many people have forgotten about the history of DHL. Just briefly, who DHL, it stands for something. Yes, I can hardly remember it, but perhaps you could elaborate.
I always forget the names. I might ask David to step in, but it's the initials of basically three surfers in the US who had trouble sending their equipment from the US over to Hawaii. That's the kind of story I always tell. And they formed this courier company to be able to transport their cargo. So DHL was formed, and it's the Deutsche Post Group back in the early 2000s, late 90s, started to buy up different companies, and the DHL brand was the biggest of all of those. So we bought Danzas, we bought XL,
right,
MSAS, DHL, and the DHL brand became the brand that is now synonymous. And actually recently we even dropped the Deutsche Post part of the for the group, so we're now the DHL group rather than the Deutsche Post DHL, which is what we were known as previously.
Okay, yeah, it's certainly an impressive company, and I see regularly some of the major shipments that you handle. How do you organize a huge company like that? You have industrial projects. That means you have specialists, not, let's say, general forwarding. You have people sitting around in various locations. Do you have hubs? I mean, the HQ for industrial projects is in the UK. Can you tell our viewers about how you are, shall we say, organized globally?
Yeah, I mean, I think previously we had a headquarters in Houston that moved to the UK when our previous CEO Nicola was based there. I would say nowadays it's difficult to say whether headquarters is, because we have a truly global team. I think COVID changed the perception of having everybody in one place in one office, and we now have people in the locations that make the most sense for the business and for them, and to get the most out of them, rather than saying that we needed to hub people together and necessarily be in the office every day together. So yeah, I have a few of my key team members based in the UK, but nowadays we also have a big group based out of Dubai, Singapore, Houston as well. Hamburg became more recently a hub where we invested in a chartering team back in 2019. I think that was a key area of development for us as industrial projects, to really move away from, as you say, the kind of general forwarding into real pure project forwarding. And we still have a way to go. We realize that we want to push the business forward and really become, as I say to my team, the kind of the number one address for project forwarding in the future. But we made some kind of structural changes where we brought in a commercial team. We now have sector leads across several industry verticals, mining, recently semiconductor. You would have seen we had a new joiner, John Liu, coming into the team, EPCs, oil and gas, etc. And that team supplemented with our chartering team, with our engineering team, health and safety, bid management, all of these areas, which sit within the head office of industrial projects, but don't actually physically all sit together, really drive that down then into the rest of the business. And we have 52 countries now where we have an IP presence. So we have an industrial projects head or a team running business in that country. Luckily, as DHL, we find it relatively easy, especially with our CargoWise system that we brought in a few years back, to switch on a kind of a P&L of being able to bill customers and execute business in countries relatively easily. It was more difficult in the past, but with CargoWise, with our global setup as global forwarding, if we see a project opportunity and we've just been awarded some big business, for example, in Ethiopia, where we can quickly turn on the facilities, the finance facilities, we can put people in there and we can start to run the business quite quickly, whereas potentially other companies may find that a bit more difficult. We can be quite agile in terms of turning things on and turning things off. So around 50 countries underneath that global setup is kind of how we operate across the four regions, but then we're able to turn things on and off when we need to.
That's very impressive as well. One question that comes to mind, of course, is now you mentioned Ethiopia. Necessarily, let's just assume for argument's sake that you don't have an office there. How would you then you would place some people in there for the length of the project together with somebody local on the ground, or how, and how would you choose where you don't have your own office? Then, of course, you have relationships from before, I guess. How do you you'll send your people in simply to
Yeah,
monitor.
I think the first thing is we want to be selective about the customers, the opportunities, and the locations that we're working in. We're not going to go after every opportunity. Some will work well for us and some won't. In these examples where Ethiopia is a prime one, we have a DHL global forwarding setup. And actually some of the team have experience in IP or in project work from their previous companies that they worked for. So for that, it's relatively straightforward. We can turn it on. We're now hiring people, bringing people in to set up a team. That's a 5-year contract, and we'll be able to manage that effectively. We also use our global team to bring in resources to support for the short term. So we have some global project managers that we can say, right, we need you to go to Ethiopia for 6 months just to be a part of the setup, to work and get things up and running, and then obviously move those people back out again. So it becomes more difficult if we don't have a global forwarding setup. So there are some countries around the world where we're not operating as global forwarding, but in every country actually we have some kind of DHL entity. So that makes it easier for us, where we can go into a country and say, right, okay, we might not have global forwarding, but we do have Express. So Express, you're our sister division within the group. Can you help us? Can you host some people? Can we put them in your office until we get everything set up and running? So That's a benefit that we're able to lever from either from Express or from supply chain. Now we have an e-commerce division as well, really focused on that side of the market. So it's good to be a part of a big group. We get a lot of benefit from that. Sometimes it can be difficult for our customers because they can get a little bit lost, but we do our best to make sure that we're pulling them in the right directions. But yeah, we try to use that to our advantage.
I'll pick out just a practical example. Let's say I'm a shipper and I'm sitting in Sydney and I have a project out of China down to Australia. Just as an example, I need to charter a vessel. And where would I go sitting in Sydney? If, for example, if I have a chartering requirement, would I go to the local DHL office there? Let's say you have an industrial project, then they would go to the chartering. You have a chartering hub where you have specialists because not everyone can be a specialist of everything. How would you go
How would it
about
work?
that in a practical way?
So in that example, we've got presence in Australia, in Brisbane and in Perth. So if you made contact with somebody in DHL in Sydney, they would connect you to the industrial projects team in either Sydney or Perth. And our regional hub for chartering is based out of Singapore. So Lars Vetterlein from our team runs everything for Asia Pacific out of Singapore. They would connect that and they would handle it from there. So we have, I think, as that example, I think we now have 14 people in our chartering team globally. So we don't have presence in every country. And actually, in some countries, it's doubled up and they're handling multiple locations or trade lanes. But through that contact, we'd be able to handle any of those inquiries.
Because I believe there are many shippers out there who are not necessarily Rio Tinto or BHP or the good old usual suspects. There might also be some mid-size shippers that have project cargo and they would like to contact DHL and maybe they feel, oh, DHL, it's so big. I mean, where to start? So I guess you also cater for smaller companies that have the odd projects from case time to time, I
Yes,
guess.
yes. And we kind of categorize between our kind of above the multinationals, we have a CSI group within DHL. So the top 100 customers within DHL get an account management team. So that means that across those different divisions, they get some special attention because of the spend that they have with DHL. Below that, we have the MNCs, the multinationals, and then kind of more business to business customers. And we've got a wide range of customers in all three areas, and actually want to have a wide range because we want to be able to diversify the same that we diversify geographically and also by different sectors to make sure that we've got good coverage. So yes, if you've any of your shippers listening that are looking for support, as I said, we've got a very good global network for our chartering team, very, very able and happy to support.
Very good. Very good. Now, of course, one big thing that also comes to mind, at least in the recent couple of years, and as you know, I've been active in project forwarding myself in my slimmer days, is that some of the global ship owners nowadays want to be the jack of all trades and they want to kind of step on the patch of the traditional project forwarder. How do you view that? Will these owners be successful, do you think? Of course, you can always throw money at the problem, but will they be successful? And B, how does it impact the traditional role of the forwarder as the middleman organizing it all? How do you view it?
I mean, we've had it a lot in various iterations. Be it we have obviously big customers that EPC customers that have their own logistics departments that are running those kind of operations themselves, as well as the ship owners that now want to do a lot of that work direct with the customers. I think there's enough business around for us all to play in the space, and be able to offer the value add that we can as and when that's needed. So there's value to some business going direct to ship owners or carriers. There's other value from what a forwarder can bring, in especially in giving transparency across a lot of options. So yes, you may be able to go if you've got certain trades as a shipper or as a customer, where if you speak to a carrier directly, you're able to satisfy that. If you have multiple lanes, that becomes more difficult for you to manage, right? So that's the value that we bring by having a robust contract management process, vetting process, approval process, to say, look, we've got 200 plus carriers that we can go to, and
Yeah.
we can come back to you with options rather than you trying to speak to multiple. So I think there's space for us all. As I say, we see the market as very buoyant across projects overall. I mean, you've just come back from Breakbulk Middle East as well, and I think that was a very well attended event. Lots of customers, lots of positivity around industrial projects and project business, and I don't think that there's any concern that we feel that we can't all play nicely in the environment.
Well, competition, as they say, keep us on our toes. And I being a traditional freight forwarder, as you certainly are, we do have a role to play. And I think, like you said correctly, that the customers through us or through you, they get the choices. So we should know the market for the customer, I suppose.
Yes,
So,
and I think that's the, if you look at a company like DHL Global Forwarding, in the
yeah.
past, we have that visibility from an air freight and an ocean freight perspective, but maybe didn't have that from an industrial projects perspective.
Right.
By bringing, making a lot of investment over the past few years, and especially in that chartering market, that's really given us that commercial nous or commercial visibility about what's happening, been able to put ourselves really front and center on a lot of opportunities that maybe we wouldn't have been able to in the past, and are able to compete with some carriers on pure port-to-port business that in the past we wouldn't have had any ability or visibility to be able to go after that. So
Yeah.
that's good business for us, and it supports us overall. Yes, we want to be doing the end-to-end turnkey projects, but as I say, we want to also make sure that we're differentiating our portfolio of business to be able to protect ourselves, because we had issues in the past, 2008, for example, when suddenly there's an issue in the market, and that really hit us badly as a company. So if we're able to really kind of spread our bets across different sectors, then that helps protect us when things are on the way down. And hopefully, if everything's up, then all the business is up for us.
Well, at least the freight rates are up because of some rebels shooting off some rockets. I saw even today some apparently UK ship was hit. Before we come to the end here, how do you view the Red Sea has a problem? The Panama Canal has a problem. Of course, that impacts also on your solutions, being innovative, finding new solution for your customers, I suppose.
Yes, I saw you're heading on your own journey on a ship, and it's taking a little longer due to the Red Sea situation.
Yes,
So,
that's right.
I mean, we need to be dynamic and we need to be agile to come up with solutions. So we saw that during COVID, when capacity was really stretched and availability of equipment was low. We now have the opposite to that, but we have different challenges. I think that's where we earn our money as freight forwarders, to really be able to come up with solutions for our customers, to give visibility on
Yeah.
those issues, and to really be transparent. And I think the days of the keeping information to yourself and trying to think that that's going to be beneficial are well and truly over. The more transparency, the more visibility that we can give to customers on situations and plan with them and find solutions, then that helps everybody in the long run. And allows us to build good relationships with our customers that are going to be fruitful for the long term, not just the short term gains. So we're in this business for the long term. We want to really grow a reputation with our customers as a reliable partner for them. And I
Yeah.
think these examples that pop up, and they'll continue to pop up, if it's not the Panama Canal or the Suez, it will be something else
Yeah.
that comes forward in the next year. It's our role to find solutions for our customers and support them, and grow with them wherever they're growing across the world.
Yeah. No, it's certainly you certainly have all the tools to do the right thing, and generally speaking, I'm in touch with a lot of let's say forwarders and customers around the world, and definitely DHL has a good name. I'm not saying this because you were in the window, but it is the fact. So you're doing something right. The final question for me here, Ryan, before I let you off the hook, how do you well, you basically touched on it already that there's enough cargo at the moment to go around. How looking in your crystal ball. Let's hope not another COVID, but how do you view the rest of this year and 1 or 2 years ahead, future-wise?
I mean, for us, we've secured some good business for 2024, and especially towards the end of 24. So starting up, so the immediate short-term future, we think, is positive. I met in Dubai, our head of tender management, Peter Dudas, who looks after all of our tender management, and our guys are bursting at the seams in terms of the number of RFQs that are floating around. So for me, that's positive. What we need to do is be able to focus on those areas that are going to be beneficial for us, and we can bring the most benefit to our customers as well. But there is a lot of opportunity out there, and I think the energy transition, some of the challenges that you alluded to, geopolitical situations have meant that lots of projects are happening. And obviously some stopped. So political situation in the US, we were all banking on a big wind boom that maybe isn't going to come and might come again then in the future. But overall, we really see enough business out there. There's some real stellar project forwarding companies around, some that's their niche, and others like us, where we've got a kind of wide portfolio of services, and projects are a key one for that. And as I say, I think there's business for us all. There's an opportunity for us all to focus on where we're strong and where we can deliver for our customers, and we'll continue to do that. So I think the future between now and the end of the decade for me is going to be really exciting. We've got ambitions to continue to grow our business and develop it, and we think that the market is there to be able to support that. So yeah, should be exciting times.
No, I agree, Ryan, fully with your assessment here. The very, very final question, I just popped into my mind here. We are not much without people, the right people. And there was some talk also at Breakbulk Dubai and also earlier that how to find the right people, how to get people interested in our industry. I mean, I just look at my own kids. They are certainly not interested in shipping. They are doing all kinds of other things. How does DHL go about getting the right people in? Do you have a program for that, or academy, or some kind of fancy so you can attract the right talent?
I mean, first of all, from a DHL perspective, we do across the global forwarding. So we have graduate programs, entry programs. I mean, I came through an ocean freight training program myself to come in and learn and on the job and develop from there. From industrial projects, we have launched just this year in January our own graduate program. So we've got six new graduates joining us straight out of university in Houston, that we're investing in to develop them. I think the challenge is going to be that we are, as DHL, we're 710 people nowadays. So adding six every couple of years is not going to make a huge dent
No.
in where we're heading, especially you suddenly win a project like we've won in Ethiopia as that example that you need 15 people for, then yeah, you're going to struggle. And the market's getting smaller. Obviously we're seeing companies being sold off and people being absorbed and left, right, and center. So it continues to be a challenge. It's the biggest challenge that we've got. And I feel you talked about it there, but I mean, it's been spoken about at these break bulk and heavy lift events for the last 5, 6, 7 years, as far as I can remember. And nothing massively has changed. I think we all have a responsibility in the industry to make investments, and we're making investments. I know that others are as well. I know Doigra have got a program. I know others have got programs where they're investing in people to try and train them up. It's going to be the challenge for us. And the good thing, I think, from our perspective, is that because we have the global forwarding business behind us, we can also extract people from that area. So we've got parts of the business like motorsport, Formula One, that is okay, we're not moving massive pieces of cargo, but the time definite requirements, the logistical challenges, all of these kind of things that people within that part of the industry or a part of the business within DHL can look over and say, well, I'm doing this kind of work in Formula One and in motorsport. Why can't I lend those skills into projects, for example? So we want to look much more internally as well. And how can we take people from other parts of the business? And I'm an example, and others are examples of coming out of the main part of the business and then being able to work in projects. But yeah, it's going to continue to be a challenge. I don't have the silver bullet or the magic answer to that.
But like you said yourself, you're certainly a product of that trainee internship, or not internship, but trainee, let's say trainee program. You've come a long way. You're now heading the industrial project section. I mean, looking at yourself, that's certainly a basket case. Glad to hear that you have, because that's really How are we going to get people to stay here in the future? There are so many other things, Google or banking or whatever,
Yeah,
attracting
I'd say
them.
the really good thing is that we advertised in Houston for our
Yeah.
program,
Oh,
and
yeah.
we had 120 applicants.
Okay. Cool.
So to me, that means that there are a lot of people that are interested in the industry that see that as beneficial.
Yeah.
So we only had 6 places. We filled those 6 places very quickly as part of that. But that tells me that there is still appetite for it, because that was my concern as well. Why do people want to come and be in this kind of business? And all of the things that I was trying to explain to our team when we were first talking about launching it, that the opportunity to travel
Yeah.
and go to all these different locations, they were coming back to me saying, but these might not be the kind of things that this generation want to do, right? They want to be able to work remotely and where they choose to, and not have to be on a plane and go. So it's contrast. But what we found actually in the feedback is that there is a big appetite for that.
Yeah.
Let's see. We're only a month into running the program, right? So I'm not
Right.
saying that as I say, that we've got the answers to everything. But I think that throughout that process, and as we move forward, what we'll find is that we'll be grabbing those guys out of that program and saying, we need to drop you into this business or this business because there's a need. And then
Yeah.
we'll backfill, and we'll backfill, and we'll backfill, and we'll get a good influx of people into the business. So a combination of trying to get young talent fresh off the production line with
Yes.
relatively no experience. I didn't know what a bill of lading was when I joined the company, right? Very
No.
quickly
Sure.
got involved and loved every minute of working in this part of the industry. But we can also take people with good experience on the general side and see how we can adopt them into more of a project mindset as well.
Very, very, very good to hear. I think you have a great plan ongoing there, and I'm sure DHL projects will be successful also in the years to come. I want to say formally, Ryan, very many thanks for taking your time off your busy schedule to be interviewed by this renowned media. Thank you very much, Ryan.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
And to all our listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today has been Mr. Ryan Foley, the CEO of Industrial Projects at the world-renowned DHL Global Forwarding, based in the UK. For me, thank you very much, and stay tuned for more interviews in the near future. Thank you.